We now conclude our conversation with Brent Cappell as he details the rest of his experience in Jurassic World.
So how did this all lead into your time working in the Hammond Creation Lab as a scientist?
Yeah, so like I mentioned earlier, I wrapped filming. It was 5 days, awesome, the whole time on the Main Street set. And throughout this, I had made friends with the casting assistant, Judy, just mentioning, like, you know, I would love to do anything else because I knew that there was more to do. Didn't expect to hear anything. I saw a movie. I got out of the theater and I had a voicemail.
Hey, Brent, it's Judy Boulay. I'm one of the casting directors working on Eptide, the Jurassic film. My cell phone is director. Picked you to be one of our scientists. Please call me back.
It was Judy, and she basically said, like, we did a smaller casting. It's for park scientists, and, you know, you've been selected. And she specifically said selected by the director, which was like, you know, like, oh, wow, that's very cool to hear. So, you know, I called back immediately, like, what's going on? And at that point, they actually had two openings. It was either to do the scientist, which was less days of filming, or to be a control room worker. So basically all the stuff that you would have seen looking at the big control screen. I had the choice to do one or the other, and knowing that BD Wong was back and being the big fan, I was like, there's a chance I'm going to be with like an actor from the first movie, or I could be there for more days. I was like, what should I do? And I was just like, I need to do the lab stuff. Like, I, you know, I need to be there with Wu. So yeah, that's what I asked. I was like, can I do that? And they said yes. And again, because I had the distance, I had a bit of a disadvantage because this time the filming was at Michonne at the NASA facilities, which they had spoken to earlier. And in order to do that, you actually had to get a clearance because it was like a government facility. It wasn't like the Six Flags set where you could just show up. To get the clearance, they wanted the extras to come in early to like bring their ID and get checked out. And I wasn't going to be able to do that. I had already flown in twice at this point. I was like, I can't just come in for this one more time as much as I want to. You know, again, Judy willing to work with me was like, well, then, you know, we can do this on the day you get here. So make sure you get here early. So I was like, yeah, I can definitely do that. And then I showed up, you know, that day ready to go, get brought over, and they don't have me in the system. Obviously, they didn't because I knew they wouldn't, but it was like a bigger issue than, you know, they had made it seem on the phone, or Judy had made it seem. And obviously she wasn't, you know, directly related to that in any way. It just ended up happening that I wasn't in the system. So they brought like all the extras on and like kept me back. And I was like, I don't know if I'm going to be able to make it in. Like, I don't know what's going to happen. And then they eventually did process my badge and I did get to go in. But so I was contracted to be a scientist. But when I showed up, because I hadn't been fitted, they didn't have the longer jackets, which are what the scientists are wearing in the movie. So there are two outfits for the people in the labs. If you pay attention, there are longer jacketed long sleeves, and then there are short sleeved button ups. So the longer jackets are the scientists, the button ups are the geneticists. So I had come to be a scientist, but they didn't have the jacket. So they made me a geneticist, and then I got the shorter coat. And, you know, everybody else had their ID badges like already pre-made because they had already gone in and gotten their pictures taken. So like I showed up and they're like, oh, you need an ID badge too. So they like just took me and they pulled me to like a semi truck, and they just put me in front of the semi truck and like took a picture of me with the white background because it was just like a white, you know, panel truck. And that's what's on my ID badge. So
as Ryan Crest.
As Ryan Crest. And I do have this.
Oh my God, that's great.
It's a reproduction, which a fan helped me make. And we tracked down these are the original holders that they used for filming. So we were able to track those down. And this is recreated with photos of my badge. So much like the first day when I got my wristband, I went to the porta potty. It wasn't a porta potty for this because it was a smaller day of shooting. It was like a trailer, which was a bigger kind of dressing area, which was nice. So I went in there and I took a couple photos of myself and then of the badge front and back, because I knew they weren't going to let us keep it. But I was like, I've got a Jurassic Park name badge. I need to have proof of this. So with those photos and, like I said, another fan's help, I was able to print it back out and make it almost like it was original. So
it's a good thing you did that then. Yeah.
Cool. And it was very, you know, just surreal to get a badge again, just being the fan that I was of the original. Like the name badges were one of those things that just felt iconic. Like since I was a kid, I always wanted one of those. And now it's like, oh, here's my actual face on one of these, and I didn't have to just make it. So they had the interior of the Innovation Center, the Samsung Innovation Center, you know, from Jurassic World, and it was connected to a secondary facility where they had the interior of the labs built. You could kind of walk between the two of them. I didn't get to see the original visitor center. That wasn't in the area that we were filming, but to know that it was right there is very cool. So the only two that we were around were those two, but they walked us in past, you know, the visitor center and then kind of through like a back door into the lab. Like one of the walls is fake in the set, so you wouldn't know where it is, but there was a door that you could like walk into. So that's where we came in through. And because I was a scientist, we were the featured extras. So we were brought to set first. There were, you know, maybe 15 of us, and we got kind of corralled to that center hallway, and we all stood there. And actually, like, Colin came in and said good morning. And then he, with the ADs, like, placed us in all the rooms. Like, we weren't predetermined on any of that. So they kind of like put us all around, and obviously there's a lot of anticipation and like, where am I going to get put? Like, what's going to happen here? So I ended up in the second room, which was sequencing, I believe. I was initially standing. So there's two rows of tables. The people in the front row are sitting, and then the people in the back row are standing, working at the machines. And I was put standing in the back row, and Colin actually came into the room, and he was like, he's got a move, he's in short sleeves. So like, because I was a short sleeved person, I couldn't be standing, I guess, like the sign, you know, the other people were the ones standing and the people with the short sleeves were sitting. So I got moved to the seat that I was in, still in the same room, but you know, it was just all very cool to have happen and being actually placed in the scene. And obviously that dictates where you end up being when they did film. So I may have shown up a little bit more if I was standing, but ultimately I'm not upset about it, because I'm still there.
Isn't that the same scene that Anthony was in, but just in a different spot?
It is that. So, and actually, it's one of my favorite kind of anecdotes about the whole experience. So they obviously put us in the different locations, and then they block out the different scenes. So that one that you're talking about, where the camera kind of comes down and follows Bryce Dallas Howard down the hallway, like parallel to her, and you can see kind of everybody in the hallway. And Anthony was one of those people, which I didn't know. It's awesome.
Small Jurassic World, everybody. Small, I know, Jurassic World.
Very small Jurassic World. Colin actually came up to me in this particular instance because the camera was on a dolly track in the room that I was in. And they actually had moved that second row of people that were behind me out. And that's where the camera was. So they were, you know, tracking down, watching Bryce, and the camera's right behind my head. And so Colin came up to me and he was like, so I need you to do this with the vials that you're working with, and like, you know, be looking here when she walks by you. He like gave me full direction. It was very cool. And I'm like, this shot is going to be awesome. It's going to be like, you know, my whole profile, I'm going to be in it. And then the movie comes out and it's like, the top back of like the cowlick of my hair, you can like see for like a half a second as the camera like goes like over it, and then it comes back and follows her in, and like my head like comes back into frame for a second, but it's literally just like the top of my hair.
Oh,
and that was
my
scene where I was directed by Colin Trevorrow. So yeah, that was pretty cool. And to know that he's also in there, I'm gonna appreciate it even more now the next time I watch it, because I'm like, my head actually like clips frame as he's in, so I feel like we actually are on screen at the same time, even if it's only my hair. So
no, that's great.
And that's
though.
How being an extra goes. You really never know. You're like, oh man, the camera's right there. I'm gonna be right in the shot. Like, and then you see the film, and it's like, well, like there's like the corner of me, but doesn't matter.
Hey, that's still a hair more than most people ever get. So you should still be happy about that.
Thank you. Thank you. You know, another thing that, you know, not everybody would know, the intro to the film, when the egg is cracking and you see the Indominus Rex coming out and its sibling next to it in the lab, they filmed that the same day we were all doing the rest of the lab scenes, kind of during an intermission where we weren't in the room. But there is a scientist in the background of that shot. You can't really see all of him, but he's in the doorway, kind of chest down. And, you know, fun fact, he was an actual geneticist that they had on set teaching all of us how to use the equipment that was throughout the lab. So he actually, you know, for the first hour of the day, kind of went to every extra and showed us how to use the machine that we were working with. He's a really nice guy, and he does actually appear like a lot on some of the websites, both the Jurassic World and the Mizrani one. I think you can kind of pick him out. The only actual scientist or geneticist in the lab, and he's in the first shot of the movie, so kind of fun to know that.
Yeah, that's crazy. I didn't realize that they actually had a real geneticist on the set, and that really gives it some gravitas, if you will.
Yeah, we really knew what we were doing with our blue liquid because of him. They were doing a lot of behind-the-scenes stuff outside of the actual filming. So they would have us pose and do certain things. You know, while they were setting up the camera for the practical filming, they were kind of having us do this stuff in the background. That was part of why we were considered like featured, because we were doing more of that than just, you know, the waiting to be in the scene and then leaving set. Which was cool. We got to stay on set almost the whole day. Like,
yeah, totally. And were you also prohibited from seeing the secret set of Dr. Wu's secret lair?
So that actually, the second day, so I was on set for 5 days, Main Street, and 2 days for the lab stuff. So the second day of filming for the lab, we broke for lunch, and they were prepping part of the shoot in the actual lab proper in a way that we couldn't go in through the door that we usually would. So they brought us in through the secret lab. And it was the day they were prepping to film the Hoskins death, I think. So they brought us through there. And when we did, they were putting in the creatures like in the tanks, you know, like how he had like the lizard and the snake with the two heads and things like that. Those were all there, and they were putting them in that day. And I did see the computer monitor at that time, and it had an early rendering of what would have been the Indominus. You know, we didn't know what it was called. I found out that day while filming that it was called the Indominus. Up to that point, I believe everybody had been calling it the Diabolus Rex, something along those lines. So that was like one of my first things, like on set that day. Like, I was, you know, right next to Bryce and BD Wong when they're talking about bigger than a T-Rex and all of that. That was like right next to me. So I'm sitting there listening like, what is this? What are they talking about? Like, this is what this movie's about. Like, it's the Indominus Rex. Oh my, you know, like, so that was all very cool to just be like finding out actually from like Claire, like told me the name of the, you know, like
told you and, directly. Yes.
Yeah. Well, yeah.
So did you get to see BD Wong like you wanted to?
I did. So I was very lucky to be placed in the room that I was in. It's not like the room that any of the primary action really takes place in the lab, but we're kind of like right behind it in most instances. So he actually prepped his lines in that room before he appeared on screen the first time. So we were all, you know, the four of us in the room, the scientists were just sitting there, and he kind of walked in from behind us, and he was just like hanging out, and it was taking a while to set up. So he did end up just kind of like speaking with us, you know, small talk, but it was just very cool to just be like, I'm talking with Dr. Wu right now in a Jurassic World lab. You know, he even seemed like impressed with just the degree to which they were fleshing out everything, like within the lab and within like just the sets there in general. Like, he specifically talked to us about the safety glasses that we had on, because they were branded, like they were branded, I believe, like Smith & Wesson. And, you know, he's just like, every single thing here is branded, or it's Jurassic World related, or, and he, seemed like he was impressed. Like, you know, like, I just can't believe the amount of detail they're putting in, you know, to this. And to speak to that, I did have a couple things too that I brought home. You know, it was an experience that I didn't want to forget. So one of the things that it's very small, and I don't know if you're gonna be able to see it on camera, but it's, there you go. These were on like all the lab equipment in the lab. They're just little barcodes, but they say Jurassic World and then they have the logo. And, you know, it was things like this that he was marveling at, just like, you know, they didn't need to do that. You would never see that on screen, but it made it feel like that much more of a real living place for the actors. You know, it's weird to say that, myself included, but the people that were there, like, make believing that this was happening, they did everything they could to make it feel lived in.
Yeah, Ed Varro's production design on Jurassic World was insane. I don't understand how they didn't get any Oscar nominations for its production design at all. Like, it's just so incredible, the detail that they put in every single set in that film. I'm just astonished, honestly. I mean, they really created a whole world beyond what you see on the camera.
Yeah, just the amount of wardrobe they had to put together for the park guests alone, like, astounding.
Yeah, it's crazy. No, and I think we all appreciated the attention to detail for, you know, this kind of comeback for Jurassic after so many years.
The scene where Wu comes in at the end of the movie after everything's kind of gone bad and he's telling everybody to break it down, and when Mizrani walks in, actually, I believe that was the last scene we filmed, and they put us all in the hallway again like they did in the first day to kind of block the scene and put us where we needed to go. And I got walked in and I got put into the center area, which was the room with the incubators with the eggs in them. And there was a cart, like a tall standing cart that had racks with also with the eggs on it. And I was told to stand behind or, you know, next to this. And I was going to walk with the cart like forward while the scene played. And I was like, yes, I'm in this shot. Like, I know I'm going to be in this one. It's the last one we're doing. Awesome. And they're blocking it out. They're putting more people in. And then it wasn't Colin, but one of the ADs walked up to me and they're like, you know, you're going to have to, sorry, but we got to put this person here, you're gonna have to move. And I was just like, you know, kind of heartbroken. And I got like brought off and I brought back to the hallway and waiting to see if I would get put back in. But then I see who they put in my spot, and it was Derek Connolly. So it was the writer. And so he was in the scene pushing the cart, and they filmed it, and he did it the whole time. He was, you know, going back and forth like an extra would. And then in the movie, he's not in the movie at all. They cut that part of it. So even if it was me, I wouldn't have been there. And, you know, they ended up putting him in and he got cut out.
No, like, harm, no foul.
Yeah, no harm, no foul. It was an interesting way to like end it. Cause after they were like, this is everybody. There were like five or six of the scientists that weren't needed. So we got put to like the end of the hallway. And we just sat basically like under the John Hammond statue and like got to watch them like film that end of that scene. There were like boxes of eggs just like sitting there, you know, like I was just like, that's just so cool. Thinking back to Jurassic Park 3 and like the stealing of the eggs and just like, you know, it felt like being on a Jurassic set, like all the times you see them throughout, you know, the series, and it's like, oh, they're there. And they had barcodes on them, which was pretty cool. One other thing too about the labs, that's just kind of more of a funny side thing, but you know, they looked so cool, like visually the way they were constructed with the glass walls and the glass partitions and everything being so visible, but like practically that lab would never work because people were constantly walking into the glass because like you couldn't see where they were. So there were multiple times where like a PA like walked into one and actually like dislodged it, and they had to like fix the wall and like stuff like that because, you know, they were so clean they had to be to film that you couldn't really see them half of the time. And yeah, so you'd just be sitting there and you just hear thud, like bonk.
Yeah, that'd be way too dangerous in real life. Yeah.
When we would break for lunch, we would get to go sit outside of the lab, which was the bigger area, which had the set built for the Innovation Center. It's a very large hangar again, so there was plenty of space outside of the sets that they could have like chairs and things for extras to be sitting at. we were sent over there. I mean, I grabbed a chair and I brought it like right to the entranceway of the Innovation Center, like so I could look in. We weren't supposed to go into it, but they didn't say anything about like just looking into it. I'm just sitting there eating my food, and then out of nowhere, somebody like comes up behind me and just goes, "Hey, what are you doing?" And I, like, you know, like I guess I'm not supposed to be here. And I turn around, thinking it's going to be like an AD or somebody just asking me to move, and it was Chris Pratt. And he just kind of like goes, like he gives like a smirk, like I got you kind of thing. But that it was just, yeah, I got like trolled by Chris Pratt, right? Like, what are you doing? I'm like, oh my God, it's Owen. I didn't know his name in the movie at that point, right? But now I do.
yeah, it was Andy Dwyer that did it. He trolled you.
Exactly.
So what other props did you have?
Yeah, so I did show that a bit earlier, and they were very stringent on their prop policies, so we weren't supposed to take anything. But again, I mean, this was a once-in-a-lifetime thing, and I knew I would never have the opportunity to have some of these things again, so I did bring a few things home, so I guess I could show those off. A couple other things from the lab. This was, you know, one of the vials of DNA that I was working with. Kind of cool to have, and they actually did, you might be able to see, have UPC codes on the bottom, all these things that did link to Universal's website if you scanned them. Same went for our ID badge at the time. If you scanned this, you'd go to the Jurassic World like official page and things like that. So, you know, they put a fair amount of thought into those type of things.
It's such a shame that they got rid of that site now. The only way you can see it is to go on the web archives.
There was so much cool content on there, not just related to the stuff I was a part of, but just in general. That was a really cool website. I mean, there's been a lot since then that they, you know, those guys have done that are also really cool, but I loved that first one. So this, I'm sorry things are in frames, but this was a lab report. So I did, this one's one of the things I have that's folded up because I just put it in my pocket while I was working that day.
Of course.
But they handed out clipboards with like sheets and sheets of paper on them, all of them labeled genetics. You can kind of see up in the corner, and then in the bottom, they're stamped with like the Jurassic World badge.
Oh, that's cool. The insignia, yeah.
Yeah. And so I wasn't actually one of the extras that, or one of the scientists that got these, that the guy sitting next to me did. So he had a bunch of them, and they gave him a pen, and he was sitting there like drawing on it the whole day. And I'm just sitting next to him like, oh man, like, you're killing me. You're destroying these
How
props.
Could you
like,
do that?
Yeah. And so, you know, I asked him like, could I get one of those sheets? And he was just like, yeah, man, I don't care. So I took one of them, I folded it up, I put it in my pocket.
Never seen this again, everybody.
Yeah, exactly. And actually in the movie, you can see this on like Jake Johnson's like clipboard in the control room. He has this exact like page. It's obviously not this one, but like this sheet of information. It basically breaks down the dietary needs of like the animals in the park, you know, in a very definitely not probably thought out way very well, but you know, it's cool to see. It literally says evidence of diet, and then it kind of has all the different genuses of dinosaurs. And I think that was about it from my science experience. And then I did have a few things from Main Street. So I believe it was Bo that had the map, correct? I pilfered a map. It was a similar situation during the Main Street. Obviously did a lot of running and screaming and dropping of things. So people were just like throwing stuff because we were told to. People were literally given like buckets of full of popcorn that they were told to like throw in the air and things like that. So once you were done with a scene, there were a lot of things generally like strewn about. So at one point I picked up that map and I did take that home. And then during the wire work stunt that I was mentioning, when they broke that big piece of bamboo, I did go down afterwards, and it's very small, but I took a little piece of debris. It's from the broken thing. So this is a piece of, you know, Main Street. That's kind of cool to be able to say, like, you know, even if
yeah,
it's small.
That's great. Yeah.
Piece of Main Street. And then, you know, I really think this is pretty cool. I've tried to keep it in good shape, but it's the the cup. So, and they did do a good job of like branding. The back of it was even Coke, and you know, this was the lid and the straw. And so when they gave us these, they allowed us to like fill them with water and stuff because people were hot, and they had like big jugs, so you could just walk up and fill them with water. But because they were made to be props, they don't have like the coating that you would typically have, so like it would just fall apart like if you put water into them. So this was one, again, like during the attack scene, somebody threw it and dropped it, so I, you know, picked it up and put it kind of at my table at lunch.
Swipe.
And then, yeah, at the end of the day. But it is in a cool little container now, and it's never going anywhere, but it's safe. So at least one cup is out there. I'm sure there are plenty more. There were quite a few days with bad weather. I don't know how many people have been to Louisiana, but I had never been, and I didn't know that they get like frequent thunderstorms and rainstorms. It's a very humid place. Makes sense now. They're very close to the ocean. So there were a lot of times during the filming that we would actually have to break like the middle of the day and just go in the tent and wait for like a thunderstorm or a lightning storm to pass by. And so on this particular day, they actually had to shut down production early because the power went out. So we all got brought back into the tents. I mean, we had to go through the wardrobe, like I had mentioned, and then into the prop department to return our props. But we were in these tents in the dark because the power was out. So we're in a big long line. We're going through, and like right before I get into the prop area, I see this thing on the ground, and I pick it up, and it was one of the park worker hats, that the paddock security. So there's the scene where Zach and Gray are like driving up to the fence. There's the two guys on the paddock wall, and they're like, you know, I've never seen this one before, or whatever they say. They're wearing these hats. It's not ACU, but it is, you know, just a park hat. So yeah, I think it was probably somebody who didn't turn it in the wardrobe booth, and they got to the prop area and they were like, oh, I'm not supposed to have this, and they just threw it on the ground. And so I picked it up, and I was like, well, and I kind of put it under my arm, and I just walked through, and like, nobody
thank
said
you
and yeah, so and mistakenly or not mistakenly, because it didn't mess it up in any way, but I did wear this for like a solid, you know, a couple months after filming, because I was just like, this is so cool. And then I'm like, no, I should not wear this. It too is in a case usually, but I took it out for this. So
the collector in you was like screaming, like, why did I do this? Why did I wear this for so long? Oh my God.
Why am I doing this? And that would be everything that I did borrow. And I'm, you know, I'm sorry that I did it. If anybody's watching, don't judge me.
When you finally saw Jurassic World in movie theaters, what did you think of it?
So I got to see it a little bit early. I was living in Burbank at the time, so very close to Universal, and they did a press screening. So it wasn't like a premiere. It would have been awesome to be at that, but I did get to go to a press screening. So I went with a friend, and, you know, so many different emotions, like all of us, even people that weren't actually related in the movie, like just waiting that amount of time to see it. There were so many expectations. But I'm happy to say when I saw it, I did enjoy it quite a bit. Like I had mentioned, kind of knew a lot of what to expect, more so than some people did, just because of the scenes I was around and had filmed. So I knew some of the ways they were going, and maybe it didn't kind of it wasn't as jarring for me as it may have been for others, but I really loved it. I remember walking out, you know, talking with my friend, just going, yeah, I think this thing is gonna, you know, blow the socks off of people. Like both of us kind of talked about it. It just felt like the right kind of popcorn blockbuster, not the same as Jurassic Park in any way. Like, you know, Jurassic Park is probably, in my opinion, the best blockbuster because it's more than that. It's just a good movie. But I think Jurassic World, by definition, is just a fun popcorn, you know, go have a good time movie. And maybe that's not what the series always was, but like I appreciated that for that moment. So, and then obviously the box office did prove that people were pretty excited about it. So, and then we went to the theater, and we got to get in the theater first, like all, you know, 20 or 30 of us got to watch it with all those people. Like, I will never forget, like, the first time you see me in the lab, my uncle like saying out loud, "There he is!" Like, "Oh, I can see him!" Like the whole
There's that
theater, you know,
guy.
and like you know, a full pack theater opening night, like all of these people that have no, like, don't care, they're not there for this, and then like he just yells, "There he is!" yeah, you know, those are a very personal experience, but you know, very, very fun. It's something that I'll cherish forever, and a very cool way to see Jurassic Park 4 when you've been waiting for it since you were like 13. So,
especially when you rewatch the movie now, it's almost like watching a home video of like a time in your life and a, you know, something that you were taking part in that was really exciting and eventful for you. And it's like you'll always have that kind of memory to cherish it just from watching a movie that, you know, millions of other people have been watching. So
exactly, yeah, it's very interesting, or very cool perspective. Yeah, I'll stop bragging about it, but it is always awesome.
No, I mean, honestly, any fan who might be a little jealous or, you know, a little bit like, why couldn't it have been me? I'm not saying I've had those thoughts before. No, never. But in case you
sorry, Derek, I should have messaged you then.
No, but I mean, that's what I'm saying, though. It's like everyone could put their mind into yours at the time. It's like they would all react the same way. They would be blasting it everywhere as much as they could, because why wouldn't you? You're a fan and you're excited and you were in it. You lived the dream, basically. So it's like, why wouldn't you? So I totally get it.
Thank you for saying that. And again, that's part of what I really appreciated, was knowing that like this isn't a singular thing. There were many fans who, you know, unbeknownst to all of us, like we all made this decision to do this. And you know, many of us actually were able to, and that's pretty crazy to hear those guys' stories, who I didn't even, you know, interact with while I was there, but we were both there, you know, because we loved these movies. And I'm very privileged to have had it, you know, happen. Who would have expected, right? From that Dance JP3 posting to ending up on set, you know, it just, still kind of can't believe it. It's been 9 years and I still pinch myself, right?
Yeah, no, I mean, I don't blame you. I mean, and hats off to Dan's JP3 page and, you know, places like that for like bringing people together, especially during the dark ages when there was
before
nothing.
Before now, yes, yeah. Yes.
You know, it's the 30th anniversary of Jurassic Park this year. So people are being really reflective right now when it comes to reminiscing their time with the franchise, if you will. So how did you get involved in becoming a Jurassic Park fan in the first place?
Well, I was pretty young when the first one came out. So I was a dinosaur fan, you know, basically since I can remember. And, you know, my parents at the time didn't let me see it in theaters. So I actually grew up more seeing the toys on the shelves, you know, at that time of release. So I have a very fond memories of the young T-Rex. That was one of my first kind of Jurassic items. A year later, I think they made us wait at that point in 1994, the VHS came out and I did get to see it almost immediately then. I have very, very vague memories of, you know, an argument between my parents when my dad brought it home and my mom still being like, "He's not ready." And I'm like, "Yes, I am." So I did get to watch it. Again, being young, I don't have like the most vivid memories other than that, you know, it was instantly my favorite movie. And I watched it till that VHS basically fell apart. Same went for The Lost World. And, you know, I got to see that one in theaters. So and a little fun fact, it's kind of my favorite. I know that might be controversial. I love
blasphemy.
Them all.
You can't say that. Oh my god, people are gonna be pitchforks over here.
I'm sorry. It's not the best of them, it's just my favorite, so that's what I will say.
No, you're not alone. I know plenty of people that actually do prefer The Lost World, so I get it.
Cool, good, I'm not alone. And then, you know, I did have a little bit of luck even back then when it came to being in close proximity to things that were Jurassic related. I have an uncle or had an uncle at the time who was working for Universal in the late 90s, early 2000s, doing their home release for DVDs, which were new at the time. And so he was doing quality assurance, making sure that they all worked properly before they were mass marketed. And he was one of the people that worked on Jurassic Park and the Lost World, the collector's editions with the three raptors and the close up on the T-Rex. So that was, you know, cool to know. And it was right around that time that Jurassic Park 3 was coming out. He knew I was a fan, so I got to visit and go on the back lot with him and kind of see a lot of the vehicles from the films. I got to see the mobile lab from The Lost World and some of the Hunter vehicles, and then actually got to go and stand on the set of the Embryonics Administration in Jurassic Park 3, which was also, you know, the compound in The Lost World. It kind of doubled as both. So I got to do that when I was about 12 years old, you know, that it was very formative kind of thing in my life that definitely pushed me to, you know, want to work in the film industry for one, and then, you know, ultimately hope to work in Jurassic, knowing that, you know, 14 years later, I was going to get to be able to do that. So, you know, I'm very privileged to have had that opportunity, and I'm, you know, very happy to just have been involved in this franchise like I have even since I was a little kid, and it's very cool. So I love Jurassic Park.
I had a fantastic time looking back with Anthony Feliciano, Beau Monarch, and Brent Capel at their incredible experiences on the New Orleans sets of Jurassic World. For them, it was an adventure that felt like 65 million years in the making, creating memories that they will never forget. Their recollections help preserve a time and a place that will be forever remembered for fans to marvel. If you'd like to learn more about the untold stories of Jurassic Park, please visit Jurassic Time, featuring John Hammond's memoir program, Rick Carter's illustrated audio drama, and much more. This has been Derek Davis.